better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
But you got to work.
Had to stay here and work.
No, that's I was out by the pool a lot this weekend.
Yeah.
Pool is a great place to be this weekend.
Yeah.
You don't look too tan, though.
Laid under the umbrella. I don't know.
Oh. Well, I just didn't know.
I was in the pool.
Well, see, if you're saying you were in the pool, I just figured that, you know, you'd have a nice, crisp summer tan in July. You know, maybe trying to change the race that you are a little bit.
I didn't know that was an effective way to do that.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear. But, no, I mean, I'm glad that you got to sit by the pool because that's the best place to be when it was as hot as it was over the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. When I wasn't working, that's where I was at. So.
Well, good. Well,
and trying to watch some of the Open Championship.
That's actually what I was going to ask you next because I know that you're a big golf guy. I enjoy watching golf, but not as much as you. It seemed like the way it ended had some... Had some dramatic flair-ish? No?
Not really. I mean, the weather was horrible yesterday. I only got to watch yesterday, and then I found the local channels on... I have DirecTV. So DirecTV is in some kind of dispute with Nexstar, who has Fox and NBC, so it wasn't on the local channels. And then I found it on, like, channel 700 and something. And but yesterday was kind of anti-dramatic, melodramatic, because Shane Lowry, the guy that won, had a huge lead most of the day. It was a two-man battle down the end, and really wasn't much of that. So if I'm going to watch the Open and neither one of them are Tiger down the stretch or Koepka or Phil or someone like – there better be some back and forth and some – you know, the next shot could win you the championship or lose you the championship type stuff. And there just wasn't much drama yesterday.
So just didn't do it for you as far as the fun part of it, though.
The Open's probably – I mean, the Masters is it's probably my third or fourth favorite. I think the Masters is always number one for me, and then U.S. Open 2, and then, you know, PGA Open, toss a coin.
Now, I'm just asking this because I'm ignorant, but which of those tournaments are the ones that rotate sites?
Well, the Open does.
The Open does.
Yeah.
And
all of them do except the Masters.
Except the Masters. Okay, yeah. that's my question. I didn't know if all of them
do except the Masters.
Okay. I didn't. That's when you know how you are the elite major of all the golf tournaments, because you don't even have to rotate your sights for the Masters. But, yeah, that was, I guess, probably the biggest storyline as far as nationally goes over the weekend. A lot of people watching the Open. A lot of people felt like Brooks Koepka was going to be the guy. And he still found a way to hover around there near the top. Mm. So, I mean, he might be turning into that guy.
Yeah, we're down to these last few weekends, though, before football camp begins and practice gets underway. And, you know, I know the coaches are back to working, but they're not far away from being 7 days a week now. So, little recruiting news this weekend. So yes, you're right. It's kind of a light weekend headline wise. So everybody kind of in lake mode, pool mode, that type of stuff.
Now, because you hit this point in time in July, where since fall camp doesn't start until early August now, and SEC Media Days has ended, it's kind of in that in between spot where there's still the storylines of people are going to be talking about the things that did come out of SEC Media Days and now transitioning them into fall camp. And that's pretty much what we're going to be doing a lot today, is looking back on some of those comments that were made not only by Chad Morris, but some of the Razorback football players, and how it heads into this weekend and looking or this next few weekends, and see exactly, all right, so now that we got a little bit of flavor from Chad Morris of what they're trying to do, kind of the updates on some players and the updates of what they're trying to do, what's going to be the things that need to happen in fall camp and the things that we're going to be looking for? And specifically, I think that if you just look at, for instance, the quarterback situation that Chad Morris finds himself in compared to what they were last year, you have a 1-2 punch at the quarterback. Not saying that's a good punch, but you just have a 1-2 punch like you did last year. You knew before the fall camp really got started, it was going to be Ty Story or Cole Kelly. You knew it was going to be one of those two guys. And as fall camp went on, week one, all right, still no one named.
Mm-hmm.
Week two, okay, right. Still no one named. Week three, no one named. And in the week leading up to the football season, the season opener, no one named. So what's okay? So what are you doing? Well, we're going to play Cole Kelly to start, and then the second half we're going to bring in Ty Story. Okay, going up against a FCS opponent at home. It's okay. Yeah, just see what they do in live action. Then have your decision made. Well, after that game and against Colorado State, they really didn't fully have their decision made because then they switched it up and went with Ty Story to start, and Cole Kelly came in the second half. And we saw the disaster the way that game ended. Did not go the way the Razorback fans would have wanted. Then the next weekend, you return home to North Texas. You start Cole Kelly. It's an absolute disaster. Ty Story doesn't even get a chance to come into the game. And all of a sudden, you're looking at 1-2 to start off in the season, which was just unfathomable for so many people, to especially lose those two games the way you lost those two games. So you know that Razorback fans are really hoping that this upcoming season will be different for many different reasons, not only just for the quarterback situation, but for a lot of things. But they're hoping that this upcoming season, that you're when you're heading in one of the second to last week or the final week heading into the season, that this coaching staff has their quarterback, has their guy, and they're going to ride with him. And even in the case of the first few weekends and the first few college football games that they'll be playing, they stick with that guy as well. Not saying that if they can't mix it up, especially if someone's struggling, whether it's Hicks or Starkle, whatever it is, but you're just hoping that they're going to be confident with whoever they go with to start the season compared to what they were last year, where they never seemed to have ever any confidence in any of them.
So how do you gain that confidence? What are the coaches discussing as they prepare practices and have meetings about, you know, laying out the practice plans and how the entire month of August will go by design? Nothing ever goes as designed, but, you know, how are they designing this, particularly when it comes to quarterback? Do you protect these quarterbacks from the get-go? Because really, you're too deep at quarterback if you count Starkle, but Starkle's taken not one practice snap yet at Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you manage all this? You got John Stephen Jones, now Dalton Hyatt's moved over. You got some freshmen coming in like KJ Jefferson, but I mean, really, who do you have up there with now Connor Nolan going to baseball that's taking a game snap?
Nobody.
Exactly. So how much, I mean, it's very unconventional anymore that coaches allow quarterbacks to take any contact in August. However, this type of offense requires, I think, coaches to really understand how they're going to perform in some real live game situations. Can you manage that? Can you do it smartly? Can the defense practice in a way that you don't put the quarterback at the most risk like you would in a game, but yet the quarterback still has to absorb some contact, take some hits, and you figure out their decision-making and figure out who can really do it? Because I think that's one thing last year, you didn't really get the full effect in practice that Cole Kelly couldn't perform certain elements of this offense because they didn't go live in practice protecting their quarterbacks, which is, you know, no coach wants to have to step to a microphone and say they've lost a quarterback for the first 4 weeks or a season because they were injured in practice taking contact. Get that. But you're still at a point where you have nobody really to count on at this point that's taken any significant game snaps as a quarterback at Arkansas. So what do you do? How do you figure out who's really your best option? It's hard to do when these guys aren't, you know, seeing real bullets in practice.
But do you think that just going in live contact is going to be the difference in deciding who's better suited?
I think it would have been last year.
Because I think
you'd have figured out far more early. You wouldn't have fallen in love with that arm of Cole Kelly's that has a lot of strength but not a lot of accuracy. And then you really didn't figure out its lack of mobility till it was too late. I think Ty Story proved once he got into the game and made some of those in-game decisions, maybe he was the way to go. And ultimately, that's kind of the way they went. Till he got injured, which kept going back and forth. I'm just saying that, you know, last year they obviously didn't have it figured out going in early. So do you do the same thing over and over and hoping to figure it out? Or is this set of circumstances much different this year because you got two different guys? We're not talking about Story and Cole Kelly. We're talking about Ben Hicks and perhaps Nick Starkle.
Yeah.
And have you seen enough from Ben Hicks in the spring? I, you know, I'll be interested to see how these coaches manage these quarterbacks.
Yeah, and especially with these two guys, I know that both of them have a lot of experience respectively. Obviously, Starkel's a little higher because he had SEC experience compared to Ben Hicks, but Ben Hicks played for 3 years. I mean, he's under, especially under Chad Morris's system. So, you know, I don't know if you treat it the same way. Yeah, but at SMU, so I don't know if you want to go live with them. It's like, hey, I've seen these guys live. They've started many games and had really good success in those games. So maybe you don't want to do the live quarterback situation, but I bet you anything that they're going to handle it a lot differently this year compared to last year.
How do you not?
I mean, you have to.
You have to look at all the decisions that, as a coaching staff, when they had their meetings behind closed doors, and they said, all right, we messed up here. Do you repeat those same decisions? And maybe they don't think the way they handled it was wrong. I just know there's something that's close to it that felt like if they had maybe perhaps went a little more live ball in the fall, they might have figured out the Cole Kelly thing a little quicker.
May have. But I know that I'm going to punch myself in the face if I hear that going into the first week of the season saying, well, we're going to play Ben Hicks the first half and then Mick Starkel the second half and figure things out. Because I will immediately, right or wrong, I'm going to immediately write off and say, why? This is going to be a disastrous season once again.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
You know, Tommy, reports had it. It was in all the papers, too, that other conferences were having their media days. I don't think it gets as much coverage and excitement, mainly because it doesn't have an entire channel dedicated to, well, I guess the Big Ten does, because they have the Big Ten network.
ACC network's coming. Pac-12 has a network, but I don't know how many people know where it's at on their guide, if they even have it.
I would have no clue.
DirecTV does not have it. Dish does. I think it varies. I don't think UVerse does. I don't know. Yeah. Not a lot of people have Pac-12 network, because we found that out when trying to watch the baseball game.
Yeah, and I doubt that the Longhorn Network allows Big 12 media days to be filmed and all that on their network. So my point is that not all conferences have the same access when it comes to their media days. But I was jealous, though, of the Big Ten, because it certainly seemed like they had more storylines coming out of their conference media days than in the SEC, at least with more dramatic flair. And one of the biggest things that I know, Tommy, you're passionate about this, and it's something we discussed, but I thought it was a really good take by Northwestern coach Pat Fitzgerald when he was asked about attendance at college football games. Why people aren't showing up, why there's not excitement, like, is there a fix to this problem where people are no longer coming to college football games and staying at college football games? He had a great take. Here's what he had to say.
I think phones, I think technology has been the decline in attendance, number one. I think, you know, watching young people today, you know, Stacey and I were out on a date last night and two groups of couples sitting next to us, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm old. Like, not one of the four couples were talking to each other. They were all on their phones, and it just drove me up to, I literally wanted to be like a dad and go, like, give me your phone, talk to each other. I mean, this is pathetic. So it was really, really pathetic. And I think that's just, it's just changed the way a lot of younger people and younger fans intake is all through technology. And I mean, you watch a concert and everybody's holding their phone up. Like, listen, watch, take it in, create a memory. Because they don't go back and watch the videos. They just want to post it on their social media, which is pathetic because it creates a society of, look at me. Isn't my life great? Even though when they go home, they're like, I hate myself. I hate my life. Everything's wrong. So I think it's a big cause. I think it's the root cause, number one. You know, I think the fans that grew up going and tailgating and the fans that grew up going to the stadiums 4 hours before the games are getting a little older. And I think the next and younger generation of fans are more reliant on technology. They'd rather have 12 TVs set up in their TV watching cave than go to a game and experience the pageantry and the tailgating.
I think that what he said 100% is not only true, but also I can even admit that, hey, I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people that I find myself on my phone way too much.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself using my phone in particular events where it's like, you know, why don't you just take it all in? If you're at a concert or if you're at a sporting event, you're more concerned about capturing the moment on your phone so you can be able to post it to your social media. But I thought it was just really well done of how Pat Fitzgerald, and I think it's a claim in dealing with the attendance and how it's declining in college football. And I think it's declining at every sporting event because of those reasons right there and how the intake is done by the younger generation where the intake is through technology.
I don't know that the – I agree with everything he said about where we're at as a society. We're addicted to our technology. And that is a fact. I don't think that's just millennials.
Yeah.
As much as I like to blame millennials for
everything,
for the root cause of everything, that's not just a millennial thing, because put your phone down and walk away from it for 20 minutes and not be looking for it. You're like someone that smokes looking for a cigarette, you know, trying to quit cold turkey. You're trying to find something to put in your mouth, you know, like a smoker is. You're reaching for a phone. So it's not just a millennial issue on the addiction to having the phone in your hand. I don't know that that's the root cause or the reason why people aren't attending games, but he's so right about everything he said there. I can't go as far as to say, well, that's why attendance is down, because people don't want to go because they want to stay home and look at their phone.
Well, I think he was just saying the big picture of technology, where their intake is through technology.
But what he's trying to do is draw the line, make the connection to that's why they're not coming to games.
Yeah, he said they'd rather have 12 TVs at their house and watching all these different games and whatnot than actually go to the game itself.
I think there's some truth in that. And I've made the case the last couple of weeks here on the show. All these, the people that are in the income brackets that are going to buy quality seats at a game, maybe not between the 40s, but let's say between the 20s, they're people that have probably moved into newer homes built within the last 10 or 12 years, over the last 5 or 7 years. Is that a reasonable assumption? I don't have any research to back this up. This is just my theory.
Right.
But I see a lot of people I know, people I hang with, that they've bought newer homes, they've remodeled their homes, and a lot are investing in outdoor living space. You've heard me talk about this before. Well, when's the best time to enjoy that? Fall? Football season? Temperatures are great. You want to use your fireplace? You want to watch TV? Cook in your outdoor kitchens? I think there's not just one thing. Technology's part of it. We are addicted to our phones and our tablets and our computers and all this stuff. Well, you go to a stadium. I know it's this way at Arkansas.
Yeah.
Internet's not so good there.
Non-existent.
Why? Because there's so many people trying to use it at once. And it's hard to bring in infrastructure for something that's going to get used 6 days a year.
Yeah. And especially,
and there's no income. There's no business plan that says, well, if you invest these $50,000, this $100,000, this $250,000, whatever it'd take to get the thing up infrastructure wise and then pay for the service on an ongoing basis, where's the return on that? Because people don't pay for internet anymore.
No.
I mean, as far as like hooking onto your Wi-Fi, I'm going to pay you $5 for that. No, people don't do that.
No.
They expect free Wi-Fi.
They just expect it.
It's like oxygen, you know. So that's part of it. I know people don't want to be out of touch. So I think there's some truth in what he says. But to say that's the one reason, I think I can't go that far.
Well, the question that it asked me, at least, in the discussions that he had, because I'm with you. I agree with the most of it. But the fact of the matter is that if you feel that this is the case, if you're at Arkansas or whatever, wherever college football venue, college sports venue, whatever, is this something that you just embrace? For technology, where you make your stadium, your event set up better for embracing the fact that that's what people are doing, that embracing that people are on their phones more, embracing that their intake is through more technology than the actual game, or do you try to shy away from it and kind of go the complete opposite to where you make it to where it's a different style of intake because it'll be different from people just getting it from their phones? I mean, how do you approach that? Do you embrace it or do you go against it if you are trying to find ways to get people into your games?
There's no stopping this trend. There's no turning this train around.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have to embrace it.
Is it simply adding Wi-Fi in? Do you add ways that people can enjoy the games and be interactive with their phones during the game that gets them involved into the game?
Oh, I think it's all of that. You can go as far as, hey, there's USB outlets in the back of these chairs in certain sections for you to charge your devices.
That'd be big.
There's charging stations in the stadium. I think you got to fully embrace technology.
Yeah.
You got to find ways where, hey, you can text to this number for interactive either trivia or interactive concession stands, or, you know, there's apps for things that are applicable to what's in the stadium. There's a million things you could come up with. But the idea that you're not going to embrace the technology, because the cell phone's going to advance, but we're all walking around with a video camera, a still photography camera, a radio, a television. I mean, just keep going. What else can your phone do? A recorder for voice memos. And you know, we got people that cut radio commercials on their phone and email them in. And
it can be a planner, too.
Yeah, your calendar's here. I mean, it, you know, I know the 50th anniversary of the moon landing was this weekend. I was watching Apollo 13 yesterday. There's more technology in my hand right now in my iPhone 7 or 8 or whatever this thing is than went to the moon. Now, the Apollo 13 didn't get to the moon, but it circled the moon.
Got close.
Got close. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We just got so much technology in our hand. Mm. And he's right. I find myself looking at my phone when I need to be in the moment for whatever it is I'm at, whether it's a concert. And I really find it when you're doing something with the kids, you know, you go to their school and you want to take pictures for them because they enjoy seeing that. But, you know, looking at stuff that doesn't matter, you know. Nothing on there is that important, but we all get caught up in it. I'm just as guilty.
Yeah, because in a lot of cases, too, and I know that this has been the case with me, that whether it is you're taking pictures or filming it or whatever, you're not going to remember and have that memory in your mind based on the video you recorded or the picture you took. It's going to be on what you actually took in.
Yep.
Like without technology, it's going to be what your mind and what your eyes all took in.
Why do we need to take videos of games that are on TV? I've never understood that, but
yeah,
but he's right about the fact that we all live in a world where we got to take a picture. Mm. Hey, the three of us got to get together for a group selfie or whatever so that we can post it on everybody, so we can let everybody else know that your life sucks because you're not with us.
Yep.
So we got to put that on Instagram.
Look at me. It's a mentality.
Exactly.
How many likes can I get on this thing?
That's, you know, and I'm not a big picture-taking guy, but I think the younger you get, I mean, I see my oldest daughter all the time. Has her phone. You know, to me, there's nothing more hilarious when you're in traffic, you're sitting in the parking lot, and you look to your right, and there's some girl in her car taking about 100 selfies to figure out which one she's going to post for the day.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, like, what are you doing? I mean, you want to video these people and show it to them. Here's how stupid you look.
So, got to get that filter right, Tommy. Got to get it all right.
I mean, if you ever see me post an individual selfie, unless it's at, like, Augusta National or the game at Notre Dame next year, or something, unless it's something along those lines, which is truly like a once or maybe twice in a lifetime moment, just hit me in the mouth.
Yeah, I'm going to kick you in the shin.
If I'm just taking a routine Tuesday selfie, just punch me in the mouth.
I'm taking your phone and throwing it in the water.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't get that part, but there are a lot of you out there, you know, shaking your head at me right now.
Yeah. And listen, I will fully admit that I am guilty of this. I mean, I am. I grew up in the era of technology and of phones and of social media. I'm guilty of it just as anybody. I mean, look at my social media. I take pictures. I put videos up of stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying that I enjoy it. But it feels like that's the culture that's been created where it's like, you got to do that.
But, dude, it's not just your generation.
Now, well, I know.
I was looking at out there Saturday night. I had a little family cookout and some, you know, my father-in-law was over and he was sitting there. But guess what he was doing? 76 years old. He's looking at his phone, sitting out on the patio, drinking a cold one. You know, I don't think it's just an age deal. You know, as much as I'd love to blame millennials for the downfall for everything that's wrong in life, I don't care if you're 26, 46, or 76, this is something that we all face as a challenge of ours. We're addicted to our phones. Like I said, put it down and walk to the other side of the house and sit there for 20 minutes and see how many times you reach in your pocket or reach on for the phone. How many times have you thought your phone was vibrating and it really wasn't?
All the time.
Did I just get a message? Did something just happen? You reach for your phone and nothing's happened.
You'd have Somebody's paying that, attention to
you'd,
me?
You'd have swore that phone's vibrating in your pocket. No, it wasn't. What was that then? I don't know.
It's like you're feeling things. You're seeing things. It's imaginary. You're just so used to it.
Because we're addicted.
And you're hoping. And you're hoping someone's paying attention to you by giving you a notification. I get it. It's stupid, but I get it.
And see, I'm not even that caught up on social media stuff, but I am addicted to checking emails, looking at Facebook. You know, and I don't post enough. Y'all are always on me about I need to post more.
Well, just quality post over quantity, for sure.
So you're saying what I post is garbage?
No, I'm just I know I'm complimenting. No, hold on a second, I'm complimenting you. I'm saying that you don't post a lot because you
I don't.
You're
y'all
quality posters.
Me I need to post more.
No, don't post more.
Okay. Post less.
Post less.
Good.
Read more.
I'll
post
feel like
less.
I'm less under pressure.
Read more. Post less. Right. Good rule of thumb to live by. But you know, and you brought up a good point.
Because I'll go days without posting something.
Yeah, and
days.
And you know, Twitter's my thing. I don't do much Facebook or Instagram as much. There'll be some pictures and stuff, but I tried putting my phone down for 3 hours and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't, and it sucks. I'm not happy, and I'm not always proud of it, but it sucks.
But that's how we stay connected. I'm always worried there's going to be some kind of emergency that needs my attention.
I know.
And the only way to get a hold of me is this phone.
Yeah, and see, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that Tommy Kraft's going to call me and say, John, we're off the air, I'm going to have to jump up and be ready Freddy and get it done.
I'm worried John Neighbor's going to call me and say, hey, we got, studios on fire.
Yeah, the building's
hurry,
on fire.
Help.
Yeah, come on over. I don't call 911 first. I call Tommy Kraft because he'll know what to do.
Where were you, Kraft? You didn't answer. Yeah, I was in the middle of the river.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. To further discuss the Razorback football team, Tom, appreciate you joining us, man. How was the weekend?
It was a fine weekend, man. I'm getting mentally prepared to get back into the thick of this thing, so we're right on the brink, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we're right up in it. So let's start right there, and I want to ask you about the quarterback situation, because Chad Morris was actually asked in SEC Media Days as far as a timetable goes for quarterback, and he pretty much gave the coach's answer. He's like, I know we'll trot somebody out there. Game one, he's sooner rather than later is when you like to have the quarterback name. I mean, just the most cliche answer, but that's what you expect out of a coach. When you're looking at the quarterback situation, though, Tom, and you're looking at Ben Hicks or Nick Starkle because you feel like those are going to be the two guys that are going to be in the running, how do you feel like this coaching staff is going to go about handling the situation with these two guys in fall camp?
Well, first of all, Hicks is the guy who had the leading role throughout spring. And he's played in the offense for 3 years prior to that. So he's going to go out there. I mean, and what Nick Starkle has to do is show that he knows the playbook, that he can make the in-play adjustments, because that's so critical, knowing whether what coverage you see on your, on your number two receiver means he's going to cut in or break out or whatever. And so, and in the leadership, I mean, Nick Starkle clearly has a huge arm. And he has SEC game experience, and Ben Hicks has experience in this offense, but not SEC experience. So I think it's pretty simple that Hicks is going to roll with the ones, and then Starkle's going to do what he can. And I'm sure they're going to give Starkle and John Stephen Jones and even KJ Jefferson some play, and then, start winnowing down when you get closer to the first game. But it looks like a two-horse race. For the most part, unless one of those other two guys really, really blows up.
Do they need to go live? Do the quarterbacks need to take some limited contact, see real game-like situations for these coaches to really figure it out? I know the protective jerseys and keeping guys from getting hurt is the kind of the way everybody does it now. But can you really figure out in an offense like this, Tom, what the quarterback's going to do on a game day until you go live in practice?
Well, now, that's a good question, Tommy. I think Chad Morris has been more of the mind that you don't let him get hit. I want to say there's been one period where I'm not sure if they were tackling the quarterbacks, but I think they were thudding them up. And so I don't know if I would bring them to the ground. Joe Moorhead, I believe, said that they had one live day in spring, and that was like an eye-opener to me. But Mississippi State does run its quarterbacks a good bit. And I think when Arkansas's offense is in full bloom, we're going to see more quarterback runs, and they're going to recruit to that. Mm-hmm. And the guys coming up have done some of that. So I don't know if I'd go full tackle, but they might have a thud session worked in where you get all the way to the quarterback, but you just don't tackle them to the ground.
Well, Tom, and I feel like that's an interesting thing, not just for the quarterback, but for anybody on this Razorback football team, because we know depth is so important in college football and to be successful. And if you're a team like Arkansas, where you're trying to build this sucker back up, the most difficult thing to do is to make sure that you guys in practice are getting enough run, getting enough reps, getting enough live action, but also making sure that they stay healthy and that you don't get hurt. Because we know if you just look at, say, for instance, the offensive line, an injury to the offensive line would be devastating, just like it would be for other positions too, like the linebacker position. It would be devastating. So if you're Coach Morris, how do you go about balancing that fact where you don't want to have the guys go too hard to risk injury, but you also don't want them to be softened up that once they get into an actual game, that's where they get first contact?
Yeah, I mean, tricky balance, but they'll do live tackling because you know how important that is. And John Chavis is old school, and he knows how important it is. But you just have to, you know, teach the guys to try to stay off the ground. You know, don't push guys over other guys. Don't tackle below the knees in some periods, you know. And so just have to be smart and coach your players to be smart. I mean, nicks and bruises are going to happen. You don't avoid that in a fall camp. You just you don't want to have the Nile Davis type injury where you lose them for a season.
So what are, you know, as you know, we're 10 days or a little more than 10 days out from players reporting their first weekend of August and then camp gets underway. What are two or three of the things that you need to see in the first 10 days of practice? What are two or three of the things that Tom Murphy's worried about as the coaches will talk in that first week of August?
Well, I want to see some offensive execution because there were so many skill guys who were lost during spring and the, you know, rotation on the offensive line and stuff. Just a smoother look. The defense won the spring, and they won what virtually about 12 of the 15 days of spring, maybe 11, maybe 12, might have been a tie or two in there. But I want to see them be on the same page and the completion percentage go up, the completion percentage against air go up. Because and Ben Hicks talked about that to me in an interview I had with him a few weeks ago, how getting out there and getting on the same page with the receivers is so huge. And that's what I'd like to see. And then, you know, it looks like they're going to go with a couple of freshmen at nickel with Greg Brooks and Jalen Catalan. So those guys, you know, getting those guys into the flow. There's going to be some young guys contributing on the back end on defense. And Cam Curl Joe Fouché and Jarquez McClellan, they got to bring these young guys along and make it so they can rotate back there on the back end.
Speaking with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now on the Morning Rush. Yeah, Tom, that was kind of the thing I felt that I wanted to see the most, too, is just the organization of everything, just knowing where people need to be, where they need to line up, running this offense, because I know it's also about defense, too, and they got to take care of that, of course. But offensively speaking, there were times last year where you had to waste timeouts because people didn't know the simplest of things like where to line up. You had penalties happen. You had just and you had guys running into each other. I mean, you had things going on that just can't happen if you're an SEC program or a football program in general. And I feel like that might be one of the most important things that's not getting talked about enough is just, yeah, you want playmakers. Yeah, you need players, of course. But you also need to have those players, as good as they may be, know what they're doing, know where they need to be, and know how to execute. And I feel like that might be the biggest thing and biggest key that you need to see change from last season to this year.
Absolutely, John. I mean, when you have coaching transition, there's going to be some of those weird plays, you know, some colliding in the backfield. There was some of that, and even good, well-oiled teams have some colliding in the backfield. In fact, you remember a few years ago when Lane Kiffin was still the Alabama OC, there was a snap on a receiver in motion. The snap hit the receiver's thigh, and, of course, you cut to the Nick Saban on the sideline, and he's going ballistic. So those things happen, but year two, the flow should be better. The look should be better. Execution, obviously. And then Ben Hicks has been in the offense before. You can't stress that enough. And he's been getting with these receivers. So I get the feel. You know, they worried about a lot of things. You know, first downs, too many lost yardage plays on first downs, too many times behind the chains. I think all that's going to be a little bit better. And they've got to start being able to put some pressure on defenses and really, you know, really make them think that they could be attacked downfield. And when you add in that C.J. O'Grady is going to be in there, Rakeem Boyd is going to be back in there, they're going to try that speed. I mean, Jordan Jones, it's time for him to make a step up this year. That you can stretch defenses or at least attempt to stretch defense. Back those safeties up a little. I think it all is all going to add up, and Arkansas is going to be more successful on offense this season.
Kind of recapping SEC media days from last week before we go, Tom. Arkansas picked last in the division by the media. No real surprises there, is there?
No, not at all. Not when you went 0-8 and, you know, you still have some depth issues at some positions. You're still trying to get better team speed. I mean, we can talk about all the flow and execution and personnel all you want, but until Arkansas gets a deeper roster with great speed, people are not going to, you know, pick them high in this conference. And that class one for Chad Morris as a full staff, their second signing class, was a good step in the right direction.
All right, Tom, real quick before I let you get out of here, I feel like Rakeem Boyd is going to rush for 1,000 yards this season. Am I crazy?
Oh, no, you're not crazy, because I think if he had stayed healthy, I mean, he had that four-game stretch, and I can't remember if it was three consecutive 100s and then a 99, but, you know, it was Alabama. It was against good competition that he ran for 100 yards, so he could do that. Now, I do want to see them rotate guys. I want to see Chase Hayden get more carries this year. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see Devwall Whaley get used in the fourth quarter and you know, pound on teams. So the only reason that Rakeem Boyd, you know, wouldn't get 1,000 yards, if you featured him and he got 20, 25 carries a game, he would. So I think he'll be right around that number.
Yeah, and if he does, I know it'll be a big year for the offense, too. At least that's what you would assume. Anytime you have a 1,000-yard rusher, it probably means the offensive line was a little bit better, too, which we all know that Arkansas needs to have improve this upcoming season. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always appreciate you joining us, Tom. Great stuff, man. We'll catch up with you later this week, all right?
Sounds great. See y'all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Lemon Tea, a unique twist on America's favorite light lager.
Did you see the whole Jim Harbaugh controversy over the weekend? I know this is just another run-of-the-mill season for Jim Harbaugh and being controversial.
Well, and I'm not sure. We're talking about the comment he made on the podcast.
There's two
about Urban Meyer. Which one are we talking about here?
I was actually referring to more of the mental health issue that he took. But yes, also the Urban Meyer. He had two big storylines over the weekend. Where I didn't have a problem with the Urban Meyer thing, because he was just being honest. Maybe the timing of it all was, hey, you're saying this as he's left and he's no longer in your conference. So when he came out and said that, controversy always follows Urban Meyer.
Factual statement.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. But no, it was more about his take on mental health, because this kind of took social media, which is normally pretty easy, by storm. When it comes to very particular hot topics, because one of those hot topics, of course, in college football especially, is transfers. And it becomes into this constant battle of, all right, so who needs to be in power here? Do the coaches and the schools need to have more power than the players when it comes to transfers? Do the players, should they just be able to transfer wherever they want for whatever reason they want? Because coaches can do that, where they can just get up and go. Should there be any sort of penalty for sitting out? And what about all the waivers? How do you go about saying which waiver is legitimate and which one's not? And all of those things. So it's a very touchy subject and has a lot of strong opinions. Well, Jim Harbaugh was on a podcast and also offered an inclusion to the Urban Meyer comments. He was talking about transfers and how a lot of cases, especially when they have mental health reasons, it can be a really tricky situation. Here's what he had to say.
You know, the youngster that says, okay, this is a mental health issue. You know, I'm suffering from depression, or that's a reason that they're getting eligible. And once that's known that you're, hey, just say this, you know, or say that, and then to get eligible, the problem I see in that is that you're going to have guys that are, okay, yeah, I'm depressed. I've met a little.
They're going to say what they got to say.
But then, you know, down the road, I don't see that helping them. You know, if it's not a legitimate thing, and nobody would know. But what are you going to say? Like, oh, 10 years down, well, I just said what I had to say. And no. I think you're putting them in a position that's unfair, not right, and as you said, John, you're saying it just to say it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not truthful. That's not necessarily truthful, and you know, that's not something that we should be promoting at the college level.
So when he said this, it obviously sparked a huge conversation because, and specifically, James Hudson was a player that played for him, and he had transferred out of Michigan and was trying to get a waiver into Cincinnati and was claiming it was mental health and a depression situation that he was coming out. So a lot of people felt like Jim Harbaugh in this specific situation was targeting that particular player. And, of course, his mother spoke out against it. And so it's caused this whole stir. And, Tommy, again, we didn't play college football. We didn't play college sports. And we know that it is an ever-changing and ever-researching and trying to figure out the best way to take care of the players and to take care of the fans and all that. There's just a lot of people that have to be taken care of. But when you hear Jim Harbaugh make those comments, do you feel like I do, where it's like, I see where he's coming from, but at the same time, you can also see where the other side of it is, where, you know, mental health is a serious thing that a lot of people struggle with.
Greg Sankey spent a good piece of his opening address at SEC Media Days talking about student-athletes across the conference. And I think I forget the numbers, over 5,000 student-athletes across the 14 schools. That, I mean, he's not directly responsible for them, but he's responsible for the institutions that are.
Right.
And consistently, they come back to him. So I'm just going to bring it home to the SEC because,
go ahead,
you know, Jim Harbaugh and them, we're not as, we hear what he says, but just to broaden it out, to give some credibility to what Harbaugh's saying, this is something that the commissioner of the SEC said is an issue within the league that the student athlete is bringing to him in meetings that they have with students across the league, that, hey, we need more help in this area, and mental health is one of those. This isn't just an issue that we need to help the student athletes. This is an issue that universities are struggling to find solutions at the university level, including the student athletes as well. So it's what Harbaugh's saying. Now he's going at it from, should you be able to just play this card to get a transfer? I totally agree with him.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to just say I'm depressed or to say I have anxiety. And if you're really not suffering from those issues, you're using that as a way to get immediately eligible elsewhere. That's
a terrible thing to do.
So I totally see where he's coming from. But we can't turn a blind eye or ignore that there are real issues in society. I mean, we're trying to pin this down to college athletics. There are mental health issues that are just going unchecked and undealt with because people don't know what to do, where to turn, or they don't want to admit they have a problem. And it's things that are out of their control. It's chemical imbalances that are beyond anything you can do. And oftentimes a little pill on a regular basis will help get you right. And we just learn more. I mean, that's the thing. This is just another area, I think, as medicine and research and everything continues to advance, we know more today than we did 30 years ago. You know, we know a whole lot more 30 years ago than we did 50 years ago. This is just another evolution in medical care that we're going to have to embrace because there is a social stigma when someone says, I have depression or I have anxiety or I have whatever the mental issue is. There's still a social stigma out there with that.
Yeah, because this is what makes it so dicey, too, is because Jim Harbaugh's comments, people felt like they were completely and totally out of line. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to go to that point because I get what he's saying. I really do. Maybe the way he worded it and how he came about it wasn't the right way. But I do get what he's saying because, Tommy, when we over this past just year, for instance, when you saw players transfer out, which players got the waiver seemed like every single time they asked for? It was the quarterbacks. Big-time quarterbacks who transferred out got waivers for what people felt like were not very good reasons, or at least reasons that seemed inconsistent, where you had other players that weren't quarterbacks, like tight ends and situations like that. I think Luke Ford was one of them. that was denied a waiver, even though people felt like it was a legitimate reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people, and I think what Jim Harbaugh is saying, is that we don't want to continue down a path where anytime a player is wanting to transfer out, which is very common as we see year in and year out, it's getting more and more apparent that there's a lot more people wanting to transfer out, that when they do transfer out, they aren't told, hey, it's just say this and you'll get a waiver and you won't have to sit out a year. Because then that diminishes the actual real problem. That starts delegitimizing the actual people who have to deal with depression and have those mental health issues that are trying to find their way, where it's almost you're taking advantage of the system. And I don't know how you go about it where you say, well, let's check into this case of this player and see if this mental health issue he's discussing is legitimate. I don't know how you can go about that. And I don't know, but we also see people that always take advantage of the systems that are in place and then the rules that are in place. I don't know if there's a right or wrong term, but my point is that I do see where Jim Harbaugh's coming from.
But we've seen players try to transfer from one school to another and, you know, grandma's sick, family member's ill. Well, I mean, does anyone check into those situations? Is grandma really in dire need of having more family near them? Is there really that sick family? And in some cases, it's 1,000% legit, but I also am skeptical when someone needs to transfer and become immediately eligible elsewhere because grandma, who's in her 80s, is not doing well. Of course, I wonder how much due diligence is done on those cases, too. Yeah. So I think there's problems when he's talking about it with what Harbaugh's saying here. I think the whole transfer system has got some issues where who are you going to grant? How do you remain consistent? And this mental health issue, I think, is something that college athletics is just on the edge of starting to deal with. I think it's going to be something that's vastly more in the conversations moving forward than what we've ever seen before.
Yeah, and you mentioned Greg Sankey, which was a great point on how long he spent on mental health. It's obviously something that college football in general is trying to really get ahead of it on and trying to figure out how they can make it better for the players and make it to in an environment to where mental health is talked about, it's discussed, it's helped in any way that in shape or form. Well, but it's a matter of, I'm looking at it from the perspective of when it comes to those particular situations where players need out or need to transfer or whatnot, I just don't know how, like, what you talk to doctors and you have to get a diagnosis there. I just don't know how you police it.
I mean, you got team physicians around that can visit with, but I think this is a specialty care that, you know, requires counseling, I don't know. I'm not as plugged in and understand that, but I also am not naive enough to think it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And that people don't need help. So I just think it's an issue that we're maybe more aware of in society, or we know how to treat and deal with more readily now. And why we would think college athletics would be exempt. Well, you got the world by the tail and pulling downhill. You're a college quarterback. You're a running back. You've got a full ride athletic scholarship. What do you have to be depressed about? What are you nervous about? And I think that's some people's take on it.
Yeah,
and it just couldn't be more inaccurate.
Yeah, and it's not just college athletes. I mean, there's college students just in general. People that get under a lot of stress and have to go under a lot of things that go through these problems.
And Greg Sankey was looking at it from the angle also with sports wagering becoming legal. Does this put additional pressure on college athletes? I don't even think they should be considering the ramifications of their performance based on what happens with wagering lines, but I could certainly see where that's a concern.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of moving parts and a lot of different layers to unfold from these situations. And again, I think it's great that Greg Sankey and others in college football are trying to find ways to develop this and make it better and make it more out in the open to discuss these things. But it's just a matter of how do you go about it? How will it go? And then when it comes to things like transfers, like Jim Harbaugh was discussing, you know, what's the next step in there? And how do you make sure that those who are really suffering from it are really suffering from it?
And would a move make the situation better or worse? I think we do make it too easy, whether there's an issue or in some, we just make it easy for people to quit nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's true, too. And I know that's a controversial thing you say to some, but I agree with you, too. I think that's where you have to find that balance.
There ought to, in life, when you make a decision to jump the fence and go to what you think is the greener pasture, there's consequences that go along with that. Some are good, some are bad. But we don't want anyone to face the consequences of a bad decision any longer.
No. They want to give him an out, a get out of jail free card for the bad decisions, where it's like you get a mulligan. Throw it off.
I don't know. When some people are playing at the third different school in 5 years, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, there's usually, that's more of a them problem than it is the actual school and system problem.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.